So there you are. You're on the platform. It's freezing. It's drizzly. It's wet. It's the UK. You look up at the board and it says delayed. And then it says cancelled. And then it says delayed again. Like someone at the desk is either having a seizure or a laugh at your expense. And you've done this calculation 100 times, haven't you? Can I be late? Can I reschedule? You know what? How much is a taxi? But underneath all of it, there's this thought that you can't shake. Wait, I paid for this. Yeah, right. But here's the bit that nobody told you. While you're standing there in the cold and wet, staring at that board, the company that cancelled your train was getting paid. Not in spite of the cancellation, no. Not after some penalty knocked a bit off. They're getting paid the full amount. Same day, same as the train that ran perfectly and that you got home on time. And that's not a metaphor. That is the contract, word for word, clause by clause, and both main parties have put their names on it. This is how Britain's railways were privatised. This is how they're managed. This is what it's costing you. And this is what's finally partially changing, though not quite as much as they're letting on. Before anything else, there is one thing I need you to understand. Everything else, every scandal, every fine, every fraud, it just flows directly from this. When British Rail was privatised under John Major between 1993 and 1997, the pitch was simple. Private companies would compete for the right to run specific routes. They'd bid for a franchise. They'd collect the fares. They'd carry the risk. If they ran a terrible service and passengers stopped using it, well, then they'd lose money. So they had every reason not to. Market discipline. Accountability through competition. Simple. Logical. Completely not what happened on Southern Rail. In 2014, the government handed the Thames Link Southern and Great Northern franchise, the biggest franchise in the country, covering Southern Rail, Thames Link, Great Northern and the Gatwick Express, to a company called Govia Thames Link Railway, owned by the Go Ahead Group. And this was by no means a standard franchise. Under this contract, every penny of fare revenue went directly to the Department for Transport. Your season ticket money, straight to the government. In return, Govia received a fixed fee, £8.9 billion over 7 years. Not based on performance, not based on how many passengers travelled, no. Not based on whether the trains actually ran, but a fixed price, guaranteed. So think about that and what it means in practice. If a train runs perfectly, Govia got paid. If the trains were cancelled, Govia got paid. If you stood on the platform at Clapham Junction for an hour watching the board flip between delayed and cancelled and delayed again, Govia still got paid. The money came whether the trains did or not. From July 2015, when Southern Rail came under this contract, to March 2017, 7.7% of all planned services on the network were cancelled or delayed by more than 30 minutes. The network average at the time was 2.8. At the peak of the crisis, in November and December 2016, only 62% of trains arrived on time. An average of 160 trains a day were fully or partially cancelled. And while all of this was happening, Go Ahead, Govia's parent company, announced a £57 million profit just from the rail. That number needs a moment. 160 cancelled trains a day, £57 million in profit. Same period, same company. The Association of British Commuters, 2,000 ordinary passengers who crowdfunded £50,000 to take the government to court, gathered evidence of what this was actually doing to people's lives. A commuter from Horley to London? I've lost 2 jobs and I'm about to be put on disciplinary for timekeeping in my new job. From Brighton to London? Quite simply, it has ruined my life. And from someone who had gone for a job interview in the east of England just to escape the route, I honestly believe I wouldn't be on a high dose of antidepressants if it weren't for my commute. If I get this job, I will cry tears of sheer relief. The association said many passengers had been forced to leave their jobs or move house, and that was before any strike action had even started. The Organisation for Disabled Travellers said the network had become, in their words, a no-go zone. Driver-only trains? Understaffed stations? Nobody to help disabled passengers board. The government's own statutory advisor on accessibility told Peter Wilkinson, the DfT director running rail franchising, that the policy would be, quote, illegal. Well, the government proceeded anyway. Before we go any further, this video is sponsored by Proton, and I want to be straight with you about why I said yes to this one. The whole story you're watching right now is about institutions that operate without transparency, contracts buried in commercial confidentiality, fraud investigations run by the fraudsters, public money flowing to Luxembourg and Jersey through ownership structures deliberately designed to be hard to follow. The people running this system counted on you not looking too closely at who had your money or what they were doing with it. Proton is almost the exact opposite of that. Founded in Geneva by scientists from CERN, and it operates as a non-profit with over 100 million users, it doesn't make money by selling your data, because it's end-to-end encrypted. Nobody can read your emails, your files, or your passwords, not advertisers, not governments, not even Proton themselves. In a world full of institutions asking you to just trust them, Proton's answer is, well, you don't have to. The encryption means it doesn't matter if you don't. That is genuinely a different kind of company. And that's why you should sign up for Proton Mail's awesome services for free today at proton.me/fineprint. Proton Mail, but also Proton Drive, Proton VPN, Proton Pass, and they have a free tier for all of their products. Link is in the description. Peter Wilkinson, keep that name in your head, he was the Department for Transport's Director of Rail Franchising. He also held a significant ownership stake in a private equity consultancy firm, First Class Partnerships, whose clients included Govia. It's a coincidence. He joined the DfT in January 2013. He kept his stake in that consultancy for 20 months after taking the job. His own bloody department concluded in August 2014 that he had a, quote, clear conflict of interest. No shit, you don't say. Well, that was 5 months after the Southern franchise had already been awarded to his consultancy's client. He was never sacked. Nah, he was paid £260,000 a year. In February 2016, he attended a public meeting in Croydon organised by the local Conservative MP to discuss the railways. He didn't know it would be reported. Well, this is what he said in full. Over the next 3 years, we're going to be having punch-ups and we will see some industrial action, and I want your support. I'm furious about it and it has got to change. We have got to break them. They have all borrowed money to buy cars and got credit cards. They can't afford to spend too long on strike, and I will push them into that place. They will have to decide if they want to give a good service or get the hell out of my industry. My industry? That's a bold statement, sir. A man paid by the public, by you, to manage a public service contract, describing out loud a deliberate strategy to financially break the workers of the company he had conflicts of interest ties to. He apologised, of course, that you were offended. He never withdrew a word of it, and he kept his job. By 2016, the commuters who'd raised £50,000 for a judicial review were close to forcing the DfT to account for everything. In June 2017, a judge ordered DfT to decide on a penalty for Govia's performance failures within 2 weeks, or face a full judicial review. One that could pull everything into the open, including whether the chaos was actually the union's fault, as the government had been insisting. Well, on the 14th day, the DfT announced a £13.4 million fine. The commuters celebrated, the lawyers moved on, and buried somewhere in the fine print, which almost nobody reported, was this. £10 million of that fine had been used to buy out Govia's liability for performance targets until 2018. The company wasn't just fined, it was handed 15 months of immunity from performance accountability. The fine wasn't a fine, it was a free pass. In May 2018, the timetable on the Thameslink network just collapsed. Hundreds of thousands of people affected, services scrapped at short notice across multiple operators. Parliamentary inquiries followed. The National Audit Office condemned the franchise for not delivering value for money. The Public Accounts Committee said the DfT's management of the franchise was completely inadequate. Oh, but because of that bought-out liability window, the DFT had no legal basis to strip Govia of its contract. Well played, sir. Well played. In September 2021, the DFT stripped Southeastern Railway of its franchise after discovering the company had been concealing £25 million of historic taxpayer funding related to the HS1 high-speed line. Since 2014, further investigation revealed it had actually been going on since the franchise's founding in 2006. 15 years. Total of wrongly claimed, £51 million. £51.3 to be precise. The fine, £23.5 million. Total recovered, £64 million. Southeastern was run by the same parent company as Southern Rail, Govia. The Go Ahead Group, the directors of Southeastern and GTR, were the same people. The fraud investigation was conducted by Go Ahead and Keolis themselves, using their own auditor, Deloitte. When Conservative MP Hugh Merriman heard about it, he told the BBC he understood the serious fraud office would be involved. The Go Ahead Group later said it did not know whether any SFO investigation had actually taken place. Within days of issuing that fraud fine, the government awarded GTR a new 6-year contract for Britain's biggest rail franchise. The fraudster's sister company, same director, fresh 6-year deal. You can't make this up. If the Southern Rail story was about one operator being paid to not run trains, what happened in March 2020 was the entire industry, all at once, on the same deal. When the pandemic hit and passenger numbers collapsed by 77%, the government stepped in with emergency measures. Every franchise converted to a management contract overnight. Operators would keep running trains, the government would take all of the revenue and cover all of the costs in return. In return, operators received a guaranteed management fee, 2% of their pre-pandemic cost base. Not based on passenger numbers, not based on whether trains ran. Guaranteed. Official figures from the DFT and the Office of Rail and Road, £153.9 million paid to 12 train operators in management fees between March 2020 and March 2021. £7.3 billion in total operational support by February 2021. Private operators collectively made £310 million in taxpayer-funded profits between March 2020 and September 2022. In a single year, Southwestern Rail went from a £4 million loss to a £28 million profit. First, TransPennines Express, from a £6.5 million loss to a £57 million profit. Zero passengers, guaranteed fees. The emergency arrangements were supposed to be temporary. In 2021, they were replaced by national rail contracts. Same management contract model. Operators paid a fixed fee. Government takes all revenue. The franchise system was abolished. The guaranteed profit structure, that wasn't. Even if you nationalise every train operating company in the country, which Labour is currently trying to do, one contract at a time, there is a layer underneath that nobody is touching. When British Rail was privatised, the actual trains were sold to three new companies, Angel Trains, Evershalt and Porterbrook. These companies own approximately 87% of the passenger vehicles on Britain's rail network. They don't run trains. They lease trains to operators at prices they set. On contracts, operators can't easily escape. Leasing costs now account for 26% of train operating companies' total expenses. The annual leasing bill to the industry, £3.1 billion. Well, who owns them? Angel Trains? 64% Canadian pension fund registered in Luxembourg. Evershalt, subsidiary of Hong Kong Infrastructure Company, registered via Jersey. Porterbrook, German insurance company Alliance, Canadian pension fund, Israeli and UK asset managers. All structured in low-tax jurisdictions, all paying significant dividends overseas. In 2020-21, the pandemic year, while the government was paying £7.3 billion to keep trains running for no one, like literally zero passengers, The three Roscoes paid out £950 million in dividends. In 2023, their profits tripled from £122 million to £409 million. Over the last decade, cumulative dividends, approximately £2 billion to Luxembourg, to Jersey, to the Cayman Islands. Labour is nationalising operations. The trains will still be leased from companies registered in Luxembourg. The £3.1 billion annual bill will continue. The dividends will continue. The great sucking sound, as the RMT put it, is gonna keep going on. Since privatisation in 1995 to 2015, all rail tickets increased by an average of 117%. Standard single fares by 208%. By January 2018, fares were 20% higher in real terms than at privatisation. Since 2019, the Woking to Waterloo season ticket alone increased by £773. It now costs £4,516 a year. The Lewes to London season ticket, £5,500. Average monthly spend on train commuting in the UK, £512. Annual, over £6,000. In Italy, a comparable monthly season ticket costs 2% of the average worker's monthly salary. Germany, 4%. Spain, 3%. Britain, 13%. The French state railway, SNCF, via its 35% stake in Keolis, which co-owns Govia, which ran Southern, was using the profits from your season ticket to subsidise trains in France, where people pay a fraction of what you do. The government called this a free market. What it actually was a system where British commuters, you, are funding other countries' public transport. In 2024 to 25, one in every 25 planned services was cancelled. The worst rate since records began in 2015. Avanti West Coast, only 35.6% of trains on time. Cross-country cancellation rates were 7.36%. And on top of all of those official figures, operators like TransPennine Express were quietly P-coding trains. Basically, they were removing them from the timetable by 10 p.m. the previous evening so they didn't count as cancellations, or they did count as cancellations rather than delay, and therefore no delay repay was owed. TransPennine's official cancellation rate in early 2023 was 7.2%, but the actual rate, including the P-coded trains, was 23.8%. Okay, so on to the useful part. Here is what you can do. First, delay repay. Claim every single time you're delayed by 15 minutes or more. Most people never bother. Train operators are sitting on millions in unclaimed compensation. MSE estimates that passengers miss out on up to £100 million a year. It takes literally 5 minutes online, and you've got 28 days, and every claim feeds into Ofcom and the ORR's enforcement data. So it's not even about the money. Just go to your operator's websites and then find the claim section. Keep the ticket, photograph the departure board showing the delays. This is all the evidence you need. Second is P-coding. If an operator removes a train from the timetable after you have already built your day around it, you still have a legitimate delay repay claim. Document your original journey plan and the time you actually arrived. The operator cannot make a cancellation disappear just by deleting it from the timetable the night before. Third, Section 75. If your season ticket costs more than £100 and was paid by a credit card, which, let's face it, most are, you have a right under the Consumer Credit Act to claim compensation from your card provider if the service consistently failed to deliver what was paid for. A Southern commuter used this to claim £2,400 back, 50% of his annual season ticket, just by documenting that 50% of his journeys were delayed or cancelled. American Express paid. This is rare, but it works, and it sets a precedent. Fourth is the Rail Ombudsman. It's independent, it's free, and its decisions are binding on operators. If your delay repay claim is rejected unfairly, escalate it. Go to railombudsman.org. Fifth, obviously, write your MP. Not a general complaint, but with specific numbers. Your route, your season ticket price, the number of cancellations you tracked last month. What it costs you in time, money, and in worst cases, your job or sanity. The political pressure for reform comes from constituency casework that MPs can't ignore. Labour is nationalising the operators. That matters. It means the contract structure changes, accountability runs directly to Parliament, and the management fee model gets replaced. But the trains are still in Luxembourg. The fares are still the highest in Europe. The accountability gap between what was promised and what was delivered over 30 years, not even close. And nobody who designed this system has faced any consequences for it. The person from Hawley who lost two jobs, nobody went to court for them. The Brighton commuter on antidepressants, nobody's penalised for that. Peter Wilkinson, who publicly declared a strategy to financially break the workers of the company he had a conflict of interest tied to, collected his £260,000 salary and retired quietly. The reason the system ran this way for this long is that it was technically complicated, deliberately fragmented, and shielded behind commercial confidentiality. Most people knew the trains were bad. Almost nobody knew exactly who was being paid, regardless by whom, under which contract, via which holding company, in which jurisdiction. Well, now you do. So send this to someone on the Southern Commuter Belt who's been late to work every other morning for a decade and never understood why. Structurally, nothing ever changed. Send this to the person who took a pay cut to work locally because the trains had simply broken them. Every person who watches this is one more person who knows who to hold accountable the next time someone redesigns this system. And it will be redesigned again. So, subscribe, claim your delay repay, keep the ticket, and if you want somewhere to put your data that isn't quietly extracting value from it while you're not looking, link to Proton's in the description. I've also dropped every source down there below as well. The NAO report, the Bureau of Investigative Journalism, the Association of British Commuters Judicial Review Documentation, the ORR cancellation data, and all the other good stuff. But until then, make sure you subscribe, like the video, drop me a comment, and I will see you in the next one.